So when I first started making beats, you know, full disclosure, I never charged anyone. You know, mm-hmm. I never said to any of the rappers that I had built relationships with and still have relationships with now, $100, $50, $20. Like, no, I didn't do that because I knew that they were in a position that would help me grow as a producer. I'm not saying I'm using them as a step stool.
No.
Their knowledge and their game would help me grow.
Definitely.
And I've been fortunate enough to be in a situation in Cleveland meeting people at different studios and through different artists and through, you know, just different people to really grow my not only my network, but just grow as a producer in general.
Tim Gaines, and we have Levent.
What's up?
And our guest today is Tweek.
Turn it up.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Introduce yourself a little bit. Producer, go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? So my name is Tweek, or Sam Novak, Tweek on the beat. You know, I currently solely produce, working on the engineering, but right now, producing is my lane.
Word.
For sure. Respect.
For sure.
So, man, first, when I first heard about you, dude, I feel like you kind of just, like, popped up in the scene out of nowhere. You know, like, first I met you at Invasion, and that was, like, that was a cool experience. It was cool vibes. I kind of just, like, kept hearing about you, and then I feel like over time, heard about Eerie Flow, which is a great project, by the way. Let's get into that. Like, what made you want to do that type of project? Because I would say, compared to, like, other producers where, like, the typical model is you work with artists, the song gets posted on their platform and you kind of like seek royalties. What made you take the step out where you're like, all right, I kind of want to manage the creative process a little bit more with regards to my releases?
Right. So, you know, at first, I when I first started producing, I wanted to take the route where artists would drop the songs with my beats. And then I noticed early on that, you know, some artists, to get their respect, you have to almost pay them for them to hop on your beats, which is almost ridiculous now that you think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, you know, a song is 50-50, it's half the beat, half the vocals. So ultimately, like, to get into that, that was a good route at first, but I noticed that I really wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something that would not only shed light to the Cleveland scene, but bring justice to my beats. And one day, I had a former friend of mine was telling me, you know, I feel like you're slowing down as a producer. And, you know, I didn't think I was at the time, quite honestly, but, you know, that really put me in sport mode, and I really turned on the jets, and Eerie Flow came to be. And ultimately, Eerie Flow was a, you know, great experience working with Chop and a friend of mine from high school, so that was a really cool experience, I would say. But yeah, that's how Eerie Flow came to be, for sure.
Was it hard to, like, get the music produced, like, under your name versus, like, just there solely, or were they just, like, cool with, like, be like being on the project, you know what I mean? Because I know some artists are like, no, this is my song, my page, my everything.
Right.
You know.
And so my process with Eerie Flow was I would actually book sessions at Invasion.
Where?
I'd book sessions there at the time, and I'd invite the artist to say, hey, like, I booked a session, I paid for like the 2 hours, I have a bunch of beats, listen to them, kick it. If you like them, you like them, you want to hop on one, great. If you don't, worst case, you got 2 free hours just to listen to some awesome music. And a lot of the time they'd pull up. A couple artists on the tape, Low Life Lane included. That was actually one of the first songs recorded on Eerie Flow, was Haircut. And I just booked a session. He recorded over the song, and we're talking. At the end of it, I was like, hey, would you want to drop this? He's like, you know, man, like, you can drop it. I was like, oh, for sure. And at the time, man, Eerie Flow wasn't even an idea.
Word.
That was just, you know, a song I had with Low Life Lane. And so that ended up eventually, but I was like, wow, I can accumulate that, keep a bunch of songs, and eventually over time have a tape that represents our city. And that's really what happened there. When it comes to artists dropping it as well, that was the kind of got tough. I had reached out to specific artists asking for their feature price, because sometimes it's almost is the same thing. If you're an artist asking for another artist to be on your album, you gotta pay to play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for some people you have to pay certain things, but certain artists have respect for you enough where they'll do it for free.
Yeah.
A couple of them I was fortunate enough to do for free. A couple of them you just pay to get it cleared, but that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, I built relationships, I would say, with every single one of the artists on that tape, and I wouldn't say now. I would say now, you know, looking back at it, I was glad I did it because I grew a lot as a producer.
What's that?
Respect. Respect. So, I mean, that has to be a huge step from what I can consider also as, like, you know, in my experience as a producer, because now you're taking on a lot of other more administrative tasks as a producer. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I would say most of the time, more often than not, producers are very creative like individuals, right? Like, have a lot of technical ability when it comes to making music, have great tastes, are able to make great instrumentation. But when it comes to, like, the business side of it, usually they'll almost neglect this. And that's not the case for you. And I feel like this, compared to, like, other producers, being, I guess, in my opinion, more of, like, a newer producer, you know, not for, like, compared to, like, other producers who I've seen, at least in this, our area, like, Cleveland area, producing for at least 5+ years, you have, like, less experience, but that hasn't stopped your growth. It's like you've almost, like, caught up in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. if not exceeded a lot of the progress that other producers, or I guess your contemporaries, have made. So, like, do you, with regards to, like, becoming a better business person, what steps do you need to take
for myself to grow,
yeah.
for more than I'm at now? Currently, you know, what I think I'm doing, you know, has been working for me. You know, I think I've been able to grow, you know, my relationship. I'm a really relationship-driven human being. Mm. You know, actually, when I was in college, I went to Miami and I majored in anthropology. And one of the things that I learned, you know, in the anthropology courses is, you know, how to interact with people from not only different cultures and backgrounds, but just language and discourse, how to dissect conversations.
What's anthropology?
So anthropology is like almost like it's like a social science.
Okay, got you. I've always heard about it, but I never knew what it was.
Yeah,
I'm thinking it's like biology or something. I didn't know what it was.
Swear to God, so
like a doctor or something.
Yeah, so I learned about like hieroglyphics and like Egyptian type of stuff. Shit. Okay. But I also learned about like dissecting conversations. And so like, meaning, what I mean by that, if I said, you suck,
yeah.
or, you suck, there's a difference.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You could definitely tell the difference. One's more serious, one's not. But like the discourse and like the difference in how I say things and the difference in how people act, like that's a certain thing I could study.
Yeah,
and so like on the conversations with people in my day-to-day job as well, I know it's a little off topic.
No.
But on my day-to-day job, you know, I talk to people all the time. And so, you know, learning how to interact and dissect those conversations really has helped me grow as a producer as well.
That's what's up. I forgot who said this, but I think it's like 80% of one's success is, I guess, attributed by their communication skills and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So in this industry, like specifically music entertainment, would you say that it's better to have a relationship with someone or to just have your business ends like covered overall? Of course, both are equally.
Mm-hmm.
If not, I mean, I don't know, one may be more important than the other.
Right.
But for someone who is pursuing more of like a transactional model, would you say that like having stronger relationships will eventually result in like a producer having that like faster like progression?
Yeah, so I think if I go up to an artist who I think is at a better place than I am at in their career or has been around for longer and doing more, making more noise per se, and I reach out to him and I'm like, hey, I got this crazy beat. I think you would sound incredible on it. Psst. $300.
Yeah.
They're not going to either A, want to work with me, B, take me seriously, C, look at my music, or want to work with me in general because I'm going to tax them off bat without them knowing who I am.
Mm.
So I can go into some examples of just like past relationships and people like that, but I definitely think that, you know, building a relationship with someone is more important at first than securing the business. Yes, you have to bring up the business and that has to be covered 100%, but I definitely think establishing a relationship and at least some groundwork is more important at first than just the business.
Okay.
Because that definitely would push people away, in my opinion.
Word.
That's okay. How I feel about it, at least.
For sure, yeah. I would definitely say so. Like, a lot of producers that I know really are just pursuing sales. You know, like,
yeah.
I need to sell this beat.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but like they don't have the groundwork. It's like, mm-hmm. all right, there are so many other producers that are selling beats.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many other producers giving out beats for free.
Right.
And it's like, what do you do to stand out? And mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, you've kind of found a way where it's like, all right, like I'm just gonna be cool with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Well, do you believe in sunk costs in like making music? Because, you know, getting into this lane, I would say, can be costly to some degree. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, would you say that there is like a certain barrier to entry involved financially?
So yeah, I would say that as well. I would say you do have to pay to play, as a producer. I will say, I want to backtrack to something you said. You had said something about being cool with everybody. One thing I will say is that is not the case. When it comes to being a producer, I do think one thing that's very important is exclusivity. Okay. I think, you know, being accessible.
You can't give your beef to everybody.
You can't give your, you can sell. I mean, some people say, oh, I want to sell my, there's different types of producers out there. In my opinion, there's different categories. There's the type of producer who sells their beats on like a BeatStars, you know, is happy to sell the beats to anyone. I'm not that type of producer. I want someone to hop on my beat who would do it justice. I want some. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit there behind a desk, work hours upon hours on a couple beats, and really work on these, you know, perfect my craft. Why would I want someone to go up there and just start spitting gibberish over my stuff, take maybe 15 minutes on it, and that's it? You know what I mean? Yeah. And so that's not how I told myself I'd approach it. So when I first started making beats, you know, full disclosure, I never charged anyone. You know, I never said to any of the rappers that I had built relationships with and still have relationships with now, $100, $50, $20. Like, no, I didn't do that because I knew that they were in a position that would help me grow as a producer. Not, I'm not saying I'm using them as a step stool, but their knowledge and their game would help me grow.
Definitely.
And I've been fortunate enough to be in a situation in Cleveland meeting people at different studios and through different artists and through, you know, just different people. To really grow my, not only my network, but just grow as a producer in general.
All right.
Okay. So that's you know, how I view. But definitely, I would say you have to pay to play. Right. Meaning, if I am not an engineer. Mm. So sometimes, you know, I have to pay someone to mix something for me. And that's, you know, unfortunate. But at the same time, it ends up turning out fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I'm working on that. And I have no shame in that. You know, I personally think I make great beats. And so, you know, when it comes to the engineering aspect, it'll get there.
Definitely.
When it comes to, you know, promo and content, you do have to pay for that as well. You know, Kenny Beats, perfect example. He's
that
got,
dude is a goat, man.
He going crazy.
The system master, bro.
That dude is a system master.
Like, just recording sessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, bro, come on now. And then getting paid on the live, people donating.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, what? It's like a dream. Turn on your camera and just make money.
Right.
And collab.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And the thing is like, you have to have a brand. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, on your Instagram, like, first of all, I'll give you credit. You have like a very clean Instagram where it's like, I wouldn't say it's like artsy, but it's like you got that Invader Tim, you got that brand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got the name, you got the face to it, and like it's recognizable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if you're a producer and you just have like, you know, triller after triller after triller after triller, and it's like not professional content, like if my old boss at my job before this always said, you got to treat your business like a business. And I apply that every day to producing as well.
Yeah.
If someone has professional content on their page, professional photos done of themselves, good snippets of their beats, or at least visuals of some sort, or at least networking themselves to at least the point where they know how to attract a fan base, a brand, or a following, I'm more than happy to work with them. But if you're someone who does not treat your business like a business, why would I extend my time or, you know, spend my time putting forth, you know, my hard work into someone who won't do the same and reciprocate?
All right. For sure.
You know what I mean?
Let's think. So I just had a question.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
As far as your music goes, like producing and stuff, where do you get your inspiration from? Because I feel like art is all about reference point. You know what I'm saying? So like, where do you, like, who's like your go-to when you're a kid, like your artist? You know what I mean? Or what was the first, did you ever used to buy CDs?
Oh my gosh.
What was the first CD you ever bought?
First CD I ever bought.
I remember mine. What was yours?
Oh, my first, I do remember mine. But so my dad had gotten me this. The first rap song I had ever heard was Gangster's Paradise by Coolio.
Oh, classic. So like every Paradise movie. Coolio, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. Every movie. And so I loved that. But the first rap CD I think I had ever bought, my gosh, bought on my own. I mean, there's so many, but I think it was like Good Kid, Mad City back when Kendrick dropped it.
2012
era. But then, like, I think I had it's called The Minstrel Show by Lil Brother. You will be hip. Word. You will get hip. Sure. So there's a producer named Ninth Wonder.
Ninth Wonder of the world.
So Ninth Wonder, and there's two guys named Big Poo Fonte. And they're incredible. And they formed a rap trio in like 2004, 2005 era.
Because they died, didn't they?
No, they're all alive.
They're all alive.
They separated. The group separated, yeah. Word. But the thing is they were incredible. They were like underground legends, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And back in... they were in like Raleigh, Durham area, but like they had songs with Kanye West, like Mos Def. The type of like, in my opinion, this off the record, I think Mos Def's the GOAT. He's my favorite.
He's up there.
I think on my Mount Rushmore, Mos Def is definitely on it.
He's definitely a staple
for sure.
Yeah, he's incredible. But
the Black Star. Forget about Black Star.
Unreal, man.
Yeah.
Unreal. Word. Yeah, what were we talking about again?
Inspiration.
Okay. Yeah. See, my biggest inspiration, I mean. I would say image-wise, or at least persona, like, I like the Kenny Beats vibe, but at the same time, I like to be myself. When it comes to beats and, you know, who inspires my beats, if I could sit down and make any type of beat, you know who 1985 is, Division?
Yeah.
Like, I love, like, those heavy bass, like, sub-basses with the synth and, like, the area. Like, that is, if I can make any type of beat... It'd be R&B, quite honestly, but I don't do that too often.
Yeah.
I don't do that too
often. It's hard to find people to feature on it, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You might know what you want the sound like, but it's like, who can be on this?
Who could do this?
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Part of it's like building that sound, and another part of it's like finding someone who can meet you where you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. I got a guy in Atlanta that I had met, one of the first artists I'd ever started working with. I networked him. Networked with them via Instagram, because you have Instagram ads pop up sponsored, and there's a guy, his name is James Hooper, rock star, love the guy to death. Never met him in person though. We have a whole tape together.
Damn,
he released it on his platforms.
It was called
Unconditional. It's an incredible, you know, 4-piece project. That it was one of the first tapes I'd ever produced. He had took a chance and let me work for him and, you know, make the beats with him, and we did it all over Zoom, and he recorded all the beats in the studio in Atlanta. And, you know, it was incredible, and I grew a lot from that. But, you know, I always know if I got, you know, an R&B song, fine, I got James, you know. And I know there's plenty of other artists in Cleveland. You know, there's a couple, there's one in Invasion specifically, and there's artists all around, you know, Cleveland that, you know, make different genres. So I like tapping into R&B, but I just don't do it enough, I would say.
I feel that.
All right, I just thought about this. Being a white producer, is that a challenge? Do you feel like you got to step extra hard, or is it just like, you know what I mean?
I would disagree. I don't think I have to step extra hard, but I definitely think my work has to show for itself. Right. Meaning, if I walk into a room, I have to earn the respect. Word. Like, if I walk into a room as a white producer and I play the hardest Chief Keef type beat or the hardest Lil Durk type beat, I'm gonna make some jaws drop.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm gonna make some jaws drop, and that's the goal. You know, I'll be honest. I'm a short little white kid whose name's Tweak. You know, hi, I'm Sam Harrison Novak. Like, I'm a digital health recruiter during the day and producer by night. Like, I'll be honest, like, that's not the most
Clark Kent over here.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Clark Kent. You know what I mean?
Secret life.
And then after, you know, 5:30, once I get off, I put this hat on. I'm Tweak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I got a couple more hats. This isn't the only one I promise. But you know, the thing is like, it definitely adds to the experience, you know what I mean? And I think it can help in some situations. I definitely think that, you know, artists, I'm not saying this is like, you know, I'm not someone who's very intimidating. I'm not like a 6-foot-tall, ripped, I'm not like Jaleel, who's jacked as can be, you know what I mean? I'm Sam.
Yeah.
And it's great. You know, I love doing what I do. And, you know, some artists have actually come over and let me cook them dinner. So I can't complain. Hey. It's been a great time.
Word.
Yeah. Me too, man. You offered me dinner. I was like, man. Like, people won't be doing this shit.
So you've been chefing up?
Appreciate you.
I've been chefing up, man. I make a mean.
Chef Novak.
Bro, I make a mean Chef peanut Tweet. Butter and jelly sandwich.
Crust, no crust?
Yeah. I like the crust. I like the crust. I will say that.
Yeah. I feel you. Yeah, I never understood why people like cut off the crust, bro. I'm like, bro, bread, bro. Literally. It's not that deep, bro.
Yeah, the texture, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, bro. I feel like people would just be too picky.
Yeah.
Way too picky, man. Well, with regards to being a producer who wears multiple hats, and what I mean by this, like, carries a lot of different skill sets to be able to achieve your goals, would you say that, like, it's important to make good beats, but is it more important to like be like someone who's like able to network and to like really, you know, build relationships? Mm-hmm. Or is it more important to be a better producer and not really have like, you know, this like this other, I guess, like cover your management business end?
Yeah, I think all of it's really important. I think what it comes down to it, you have to be a really skilled producer in the end, because mm-hmm. if you're under the spotlight and everyone's watching you and you can't do it, what do you have?
Right.
If you know, the way you build up to that success is by showing what you got. I think being on a networker, you could be an I know some producers that I think are miles better than me, you know, mm-hmm. miles more talented, miles more skilled, and way more experienced. But you know, some of them lack, I would say, networking abilities, because they don't sell their beats, they don't send their beats out, they're very in their head about it. And I understand, you know, some producers are like that, but I will also say that, you know, if you don't network, you know, if I have a Kanye West song, I will say, and I don't tell anyone, no one's gonna know.
Right.
If I'm the best producer in the world and I don't show anyone my beats, no one's gonna know.
Yeah. Mm.
And you know, people aren't gonna be knocking on my door, knowing that I have, you know, beats, if I don't show the world that I have awesome music.
Yeah.
And that's how I view it. That's why I think the platform is the most important thing. Yeah, I think having good music, yeah, works, but only if you have the platform. Because I could have a Kanye West song and I can drop it under Tweak on the beat.
He's dropping hints.
He has a Kanye West song. I do not have I do not.
We need the leak after this.
Yeah.
$5 for the leak.
Yeah. Okay, but no, anyways, like if I were to drop it and he weren't to promote it, no one would know about it.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it's not on that platform.
And they would think it's just like a fake leak probably too, which is crazy.
Right.
You could actually have the song and be like, this isn't fucking you. You know right. what I mean? Yeah. Imagine that. They'd be like,
it's like if you don't have like the platform or like either
that's crazy.
What I mean by platform isn't like just Spotify or Apple Music. I mean it as like
brand presence.
Brand like a label back mm-hmm. or like a Spotify playlisting.
Okay.
Or like at least a platform for it to be heard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a way for it to be really heard. Like that's extremely important, I've learned.
Gotcha.
Because I believe I've made some incredible songs and they have fallen under the rug completely, but you know what? That's on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try not to get too hung up on if one doesn't hit. If it doesn't hit, oh well, on to the next one, because one of them eventually will.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
What do you think about the new Drake project? You know, you think EDM's a new wave? And I feel like you've been saying this for a minute, though. Yeah, you said, man. I'm going to start making house music. I'm going to start making house music. I've been telling you, start making that. You could have had Cleveland right now.
Yeah,
man,
no, honestly.
Ryan J on a oomph beat. You feel me? Hey, yes. Imagine that.
That'd be something.
Hey,
no, for I real.
Mean, get the rage.
Yeah,
you know?
Honestly.
What do you think? You think that's the next wave?
I like it. I definitely like it. I think it's shifting more towards that, mm-hmm. for sure. I definitely think it's shifting more towards that fun, happy feeling. You know, the pandemic's leaning, you know, more towards over.
Yeah.
And so I definitely think the happier type of sound is going to be more prevalent. I think during the pandemic, it was more rage, more built-up, pent-up aggression, and just trap, rap, hyper-pop. Like, mm-hmm. you saw the emergence of the Cleveland hyperpop scene, at least in this city, go nuts during the pandemic. Like, if you were in the city of Cleveland and you were around music, I think hyperpop, at least in the underground, hyperpop was the most prevalent during the pandemic.
Definitely. Definitely.
Out of all the genres.
For sure.
And so, I kind of lost my train of thought, not going to lie.
Going back to rage, so since that sound has died down, would you say the next like trendy like sound design, I guess the next step for like what's trendy regarding like music that a lot of people are going to be listening to, dance, like house, deep house type of sound?
I don't think it's going to lean as much towards that as people think. I think when Tory Lanez dropped Alone at Prom, is that what it was called?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the 80s
hip.
Fucking trash.
You didn't like that?
I didn't, dude.
What?
No, I think that when The Weeknd did it, shit sucked too. You know what I mean? I listened to it like 3 times. I tried it. I was like, it's not hidden, man.
I feel you.
It's not hidden.
Yeah.
It was just like fake Stranger Things.
This interview.
He had like a fucking perm. You know what I'm saying?
This interview is now over.
Right.
No, I liked a couple of those songs off that Tory Lanez album. I will say he did a very good job with his visuals.
Right.
The visuals were dope.
The visuals were ridiculous. Dope. Like the visuals made me feel like I was there.
Did he like redo the Thriller video too? I'm pretty sure
he did something like that. It was just ridiculous. The he sampled Madonna. Mm. I think it was Madonna though. I caught in my baby.
You can't say that's not a legendary move though. Like
he stole it too. She was pissed.
It didn't get cleared.
It didn't get cleared.
Oh, she was mad. She said, "Fucking drop it anyway." Got paid in clout. He said, "LOC it."
He's like, he said, "Forget the money, bro. Give me the clout."
Tory Lanez, man. He's
Tory Lanez is wild, man. Tory Lanez, yeah. Tory Lanez is one of my favorite artists, but yeah,
diverse
for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Going back to Drake though, I would say like that for the type of artist that Drake is. I think he needed to drop that project that, like, you know, he just dropped, like
keep his fans entertained.
Not even, he's too big, bro. Yeah, like,
he's unrelatable. It's like, Drake, he can only relate to people in heartbreak. You know what I'm saying? It's like, he can't talk about the struggle anymore. It's like, he's bragged so much, but he has his own fucking airline, OVO. Mm-hmm. Are you serious? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, dude's
what
house.
What troubles you got,
dude's
bro?
House looks like the fucking Knicks, like, stadium, bro. It's like, he can't relate.
Wait, what troubles you know really what
I
mean? Got?
Like, his only troubles, like, I might have slipped up and had a baby mom. So niggas like, oh, yeah, me too. But then, all right, that was 4 years ago. So now what? You know what I'm saying?
Right, for sure.
Like,
right.
We can't relate to you, my dude.
Mm-hmm.
Right, man, what? You're right.
Yeah, definitely.
So he's like, let's just, like, not say much and just turn up the bass.
Mm-hmm.
Reviving.
I think it was more of, like, a strategic move, in my opinion. Just because, like, Drake is, like, a world, like, he's a superstar. At this point, like Drake is not only big in the United States, like we forget that Drake's actually Canadian a lot of the time.
Yeah, he's not even American,
right? That's like hilarious. A lot of those sounds, like off his new project, are I already know are going crazy in like Europe, like European markets, like depending, like non-American. Yeah, like here we kind of want to listen to like more rap, especially like you know, it's like fans of like hip hop, you know, but like
regardless of what he drops, he's gonna be successful. Remember when Kanye West dropped
Whoop-dee-scoop. That shit fire though. Whoop-dee-scoop.
You know what I'm saying? Whoop-dee-poop. That hit because it was Kanye.
For sure.
I'll be honest, if Tweek on the Beat dropped that, that would have gotten about 6 listens. You know what I mean? So.
No, yeah. Well, it goes back to having that platform.
Exactly. Yeah. The platform's everything, so. Yeah, man.
So, upcoming artists, though. What do you like? Who do you think's upcoming? Like, who do you think about to make it big next?
So who do I think's about to make it big next?
Yeah,
I mean, out of where?
Anywhere, like who's the next up? You know what I mean? I'm talking about the next. I don't like to say like it's the next X or like the next Cardi type. Just the next person to just be up.
Yeah, I definitely think you know in different realms or different areas of music, there's different artists that are really excelling.
Word.
I would say in like the hyperpop space, I would say SSG Kobe and artists like that.
Yeah.
I would say in the indie rap type of stage, Jahlil. Like what? Like that guy's going crazy. Mm-hmm. I would say in the trap right now, even though he's kind of popping, or not, he is popping, but like is already up there.
Yeah.
Young and Ace, if you guys are hip,
okay.
He sings that song "Who I Smoke." Making my way downtown.
Oh, that dude, the Florida dude.
The rap
dude
song.
From Florida.
Jacksonville.
Yeah,
that guy's crazy.
Yeah.
He's got like 2 million followers on Instagram, but all of his YouTube videos go crazy. He signed a cinematic. It's unreal. Mm-hmm. Like Young and Ace is ridiculous. All the artists on Cinematic are quite frankly incredible artists. We'll say that.
Okay.
Also, you worked at Wi-Fi's Funeral before, right?
Yeah, so
Talk about that.
That was a very cool experience. So I was fortunate enough one day, Zach Sanuko, I don't know if you're here, but he was host the 808s mixtapes.
Word.
It's a radio station, and what is it? It's 808s
and mixtapes.
It's 808s and mixtapes.
Yeah.
WJCU. Yeah. It's shout out Zach Sanuko. Yeah, man, you're the goat.
Shout out.
But the thing is, like, he hit me up one day. He's like, "Yeah, Wi-Fi's Funeral is coming to, you know, studio in Cleveland. We're interviewing him. Make a bunch of beats. Have a bunch of beats ready."
Word.
And I was like, "Oh, for sure, up all night." Yeah. So I'm sitting there just cranking out beat after beat after beat. I even hit up this local producer. His name is JXK. Shout out Josh. I hit him up and I was like, "Hey, I need your help. Make me some crazy stuff together." And we ended up making him a crazy beat. And Wi-Fi had pulled up. I had played him a couple beats. He had taken a couple of them with him. Word. I don't know if he ended up recording over them. So if you did, let me know. We ended up cooking up something together instead.
Word.
And that was a really cool experience. It didn't end up really as a coherent beat at the end of it. We just ended up kicking it, spitting game back and forth. And it was a really cool experience. Got some dope photos with them and had a great time, I would say. So that was a cool experience.
Most dope.
Yeah.
That's what's up. Hell yeah. So, with regards to like working with artists, like what was your favorite artist to work with? I had the pleasure of actually, you know, thanks again, invited me to the session in New York mm-hmm. with Paris Bryant. And that was like a really good session, and kind of seeing how you move about, like, you know, in the room, yeah. you know, with artists was also kind of like, you know, interesting to me. Cause like, you're not only like, I would say, whereas like other producers trying to be like super technical or like, we'll try to cook up, you're almost like, you created a vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, would you say that that's kind of like your experience working with a lot of artists, or like, so, do you always click that way?
So there was two questions there. Which one would you like me to do first? Like the favorite art, like the realm of artists I've worked with, who my favorites would be. Are you asking more like the vibe? Is that what I like to do?
Because
I do like, I'll be honest, like I love when I'm in a room with an artist, like I could have a bunch of beats mm-hmm. and I could send it to him over text. It wouldn't be the same as if I played it in the studio for them the first time.
Right.
Perfect example, Kelvin. Mm. I could send him a pack of beats. I could send him a back of like 10 beats. And they'd all be incredible beats, perfect for him, tailored to him. He will, if you're not in the studio and I'm not playing them, there's no chance that vibe's going to be caught or those beats will be recorded over. Mm. And I've learned that. Yeah. You have to catch and create the vibe, and that's the only way the beat and the studio session will really end up turning out how you want it to.
Gotcha.
So that's definitely the most important thing, is creating the vibe, finding out what they're interested in. You know, one thing I did learn, and still actually from Kenny Beats, and if you're hip to the cave, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he always says, you know, what are we feeling today? Like, what do you want?
Literally.
And I always ask the producer, like, what are you feeling? Because obviously, I always come prepared with at least, if I have a session with somebody who I know, I better come prepared. I have at least 20 beats ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I categorize them, like, I will grind on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I know weeks in advance, I will definitely have 20 ready. And I'll do like five of different each. So like five melodic, five rap, the five melodic, five hip hop. So like boom bap,
yeah.
Like three pop, three trap, two random. Like, you know what I mean? Just whatever. Mm-hmm. And have it like that. But I definitely think being prepared is important as well.
Gotcha.
So creating the vibe is, you know, essential to really having a successful session.
Word. That's
what's up. Word. It's crazy because, like, when you're I feel like a lot of times some producers may not be as invested into, like, their work. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So I can definitely tell that you care about, like, just producing, like, the right track, like, the right stuff, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah, I
would agree with that as well. I mean, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it's facts. Thank you. Sure.
Before we wrap it up, I guess give us, like, a little, what's the craziest studio session you've ever had? Leave it on an interesting note.
I wouldn't say the craziest studio sessions I've had. I've had a couple really cool ones, and I've been fortunate enough to have some really cool opportunities to work with some artists that are really, you know, skilled in their own ways, and I've enjoyed it a lot. So, I've been in a session. The first session I ever had with YFL Pooh and Ray Gwala was actually at Invasion, and they were taking their shirts off in the booth. This the first beat I'd ever played for them. This is the first time I'd ever met them or anything.
Yeah.
They're like, so what you got? I was like, okay, bet. So I instantly knew what the type of vibe, because I know what type of artists they are. They love like the trap heavy sound.
Yeah.
And so I played like this Lil Baby-esque beat, which I'll play for you guys after this.
Yeah.
And instantly they're like, I bet, we'll get in there. And so they take their shirts off and they get in the studio. They're smoke in the woods, they're just going crazy over this beat. They're like, this beat is absurd.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool experience, I would say. I mean, having someone take their shirt off for one of my beats, can't complain.
Okay. And one of the first times meeting them too, so it's like, all right, I definitely know we got they're coming back.
Yeah, they definitely came back.
And the first beat, dude, that's
it's gonna be a good set.
We play one beat, dude's just like
Me and those guys have about 15 songs in the vault, I would say.
That's what's up.
Yeah, we got some crazy stuff in the vault. So
nice.
I'm excited for you guys to eventually hear it.
Okay. Well, most is that like, would you say like YFL, Kelvin?
A mixture with Kelvin and Ray, majority. Okay. I have one with Pooh currently on it, but I've definitely worked with, I said, Kelvin and Ray the most.
Okay.
It's been a great experience for sure.
Okay. Nice.
Word. Well, before we head out of here, drop your Instagram and your like how to contact you. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. So my Instagram, Sam H Novak. I'm working on it, guys. I promise. but yeah, Sam H Novak is my Instagram.
Spell that out.
S A M H N O V A K is my Instagram. If you want to, you know, work, you know, feel free to shoot my DMs. Email is also on my Instagram, samnovak17@gmail.com. Feel free to hit me up. I'll most likely respond. I'm always checking it. So,
most definitely.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you for being on the show.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Until next time.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you, gang. Yep, thank you guys.
Yeah, of course. Sure.